All right, guys, back here on Southeastern 16. Max had to make sure I said that right. Southeastern 16. If you're listening for the first time, yes, we have changed our name to Southeastern 16 from Southeastern 14. But this is the SEC Basketball Experience, episode number 6. And if you're joining in for the first listen for this particular show, it's exactly what it sounds like. We talk about SEC basketball here in the offseason, get you ready for the new season in November. But we've got a fun episode coming up with a great discussion with Drew King from PowerMizzou.com. Talking about the state of the Missouri Tigers. Yes, we all know the Tigers went over last year in SEC play, but Drew kind of gives some thoughts on why that could change this season based on this new-look roster for Dennis Gates and company. And, of course, as usual, our SEC trivia. Guess the starting lineup, South Carolina, Father Lamont Paris edition, Max. And we'll also give you our one prediction. But before we do that, talk about some fun games from last season, Max. You have made this legendary list. But before we do that,
yes,
I'm going to tell you about our friends at Bet Online. Your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, baseball, golf, soccer. They have all the top fights, UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, live odds, spreads, while the games are being played, it's all there. When the game's over, you can head to the online casino, play some blackjack, poker. You can also play in one of the over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get on the action. Use that promo code BELIEV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet online, the game starts here. Max, back to this legendary list. Your three favorite games from 23-24. Now, this is right up your alley, because I'm going to be honest with you. The reason why is because I can't even remember half the game. I can't even remember 5% of the games that were played last season. But I'm curious where your list is going to start, because I've got a bit of a short list here. My rankings, as always, are probably not as good as yours. But I'm curious, when you went back and kind of did your research here, how did you come up with these as the biggest games, your favorite games from 23-24?
I had to go back, too, because we quite literally watched or watched a portion of every single SEC game last year, and they can kind of get jumbled up. Yeah. What I kind of did is, these are just my favorite three. These are not the best three. These are probably ones that I watched with my roommates that we probably had some stake in and something and had a great time with it. But we're starting on a Saturday in December or mid-December, Blake, when Kentucky and North Carolina clash. What a game that was. Kentucky actually won 87-83. RJ Davis and Cormac Ryan combined for 47 points for North Carolina. They couldn't miss. But the story of the game was Kentucky's rebounding. They had 18 offensive rebounds. They held Baycott to like 9-6. Bunch of turnovers. Seven different Kentucky Wildcats made a three. They were sharing the rock. But the reason why it was so good was, so 15 minutes left, Kentucky's up by 12, 5 minutes left, they're down by one. And we're just, you think you're in the clear, quick panic. Nope, we're back. That was a great game.
All right. So I'm going to let you go through your list first, and I'm going to give you, again, my list is kind of just a jumbled mess. So what's the next one you have on your list?
Okay. So I skipped a lot of Florida games. There were a lot of Florida games that I could have had.
A lot of Florida games.
There were a lot of Florida games, and there were a lot of Alabama-Auburn games that were just great. This next one, I'm staying with Kentucky again. I'm sorry. This was another game that I remember. This was in late February, so this was down the stretch. It was Kentucky at Mississippi State. And this is when Kentucky won by 2 points. It was 91-89. Mississippi State was up by 13 in the second half, and Kentucky came back to win. But the reason why this game was so fun, Josh Hubbard went for 34 points. He made 7 threes. And Reed Shepard went for 32 points. He made 4 threes. The two of them combined for 66 points and 11 threes. It was a really fun game to watch. And Cam Matthews fouled out in 27 minutes, keeping the bully ball strong. So that was a great game. And then my last one, favorite game of the whole year by far. This was the Texas A&M Houston overtime game in March Madness, where Anderson Garcia hits the buzzer beater three to send it to OT off the Tyrese Radford like bowling ball skipping pass out to the top of the key. That was when Texas A&M scored 33 points in the final 10 minutes of regulation to come back in that one. That was my favorite game by far. Insane. But yeah, those were the three that I really remember watching the whole thing and really being really dug into it. But there were tons of good games last year when you really dive into it.
All right. So I kept mine to the SEC games.
Okay.
Because I figured you would venture outside. But there were so many games inside so SEC many. Play. And you mentioned Florida. Like, they're a team that you could have taken either game they played against Kentucky. The first one was 87-85. That's where Kentucky won in Gainesville. And then the second one was the one where Florida won in overtime, 94-91 in Lexington. Then they even had the one where they lost by a point at Texas A&M. They had the overtime game against Georgia. They had the overtime game at Alabama, which to me might be the one that's right there at the top of my list, if you remember that one. I know there was some controversy in that game, as we know, but it was 98-93, that game in Tuscaloosa. Alabama won that game. Crazy. It was wild. But the one, I'm going to be honest with you, that sort of stands out the most for me, and I don't know, we'd have to go back and watch. I think it's just because of the magnitude of the game at the time, was that Tennessee-Alabama game on March the 2nd in Tuscaloosa, where Tennessee went in there, won that game 81-74. Now, again, you can say, was it the best game? Was it the prettiest game at times? Maybe not, because it was kind of played more in Tennessee style than Alabama's. But I think, again, you think about what was at stake. I just feel like that's one I can remember as well as any. And I know Alabama fans are going to be thrilled about that. But Alabama, we could pick you for multiple games when it comes to, you know, the tournament and all this other stuff. But I think that one, just given what was at stake, I felt like was, again, one that you kind of remember the most, probably. Of course, the Alabama game at Kentucky, 117-95. I mean, just a game that was nuts. Of course, Kentucky's game with Arkansas. I know I'm kind of going beyond the three limit here, but when I went back and looked at these, you know, and look, we said last year there were three teams that felt like they had a lot in common. That was Alabama, Kentucky, and Florida. Great offensive teams at times. Defensively, could leave a little bit to be desired. And it kind of led to them being, I mean, if you go back and look, they had the most entertaining games. And maybe it was for that reason, which we know Alabama was able to fix some of those issues more so than Kentucky and Florida to get to the Final Four. But I think that's what I think of last year. Like, that sort of encapsulated the entire season, was that all year long we're thinking defense, defense, defense. Where is it? They're not going to be able to do this. And of course, it would catch up to a couple of those teams in the tournament. But when you think about just like regular season games, they were insane because you just kind of had that stark difference on one side of the floor and a lot of high scoring games involving those three teams.
Oh, yeah. And when you look back through every team's schedule, almost every single one has like multiple overtime games.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that was a late night.
Yeah.
So
I was trying to find some for like South Carolina. You know, I think
low scoring.
Well, if you want the complete difference of that, it would be the South Carolina game at Tennessee. Like, that was just one of those that was so grinded out. You know, it was surprising because you had someone go in and win in Thompson Bowling. We knew that South Carolina was in the middle of their run. That's another one that kind of stood out, I think, maybe for different reasons.
That's when I guaranteed Tennessee a win.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that was kind of at that period where if you weren't taking South Carolina seriously, you had no choice at that point. Father Lamont Paris made it perfectly clear after that game.
Yeah.
You know, that was in the middle of that, whatever, 7-game winning streak that they had. And so, yeah, like, I think those were the kind of games that really stood out and not surprisingly involves pretty much all the top tier teams in the SEC. I may have forgotten, but if I didn't, the A&M game against Kentucky, that was incredible.
Oh, that was the Radford game.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned that at the start, but that was one I had on kind of my top tier list here. 98-93, that was a wild game. So, yeah, it kind of...
A&M was entertaining.
Yeah.
Looking back, more than I thought. They had some,
yeah,
like,
had
high
some entertaining
games in the 90s.
Games. I mean, I think even like, you know, you go down the list, and like we said, it's going to be filled with the top teams because it felt like you got the best games out of them. But, you know, there were even some of those games, I mean... I don't know, like Vanderbilt, right? Like, they had some pretty interesting games at times. What was it, the one they beat A&M at home? They beat Arkansas on the road. You know, they beat Florida at home. Like, they had a bunch of those close type games too for them. So those are kind of the memorable ones. Not, I didn't really count in like the SEC tournament or the NCAA tournament. It's kind of more focused on just the regular season. But man, it is interesting to think how many kind of those overtime 1-2 possession type games you had, especially between those top teams. And as we talked about why the league was so strong last year, I felt like there was not a lot that separated, you know, those teams to the top, which is why you had Tennessee finish 14-4 and four teams finished 13-5 behind them. So
you could pull any of Alabama's tournament run games too.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's the Grant Nelson poster. There's the Mark Sears shots. There's a lot to pull from on that run also.
Yeah, and it is wild when we go back now in July and think about the games that were just played like 3 months ago or 4 months ago and how different all these rosters are now. Like, it's just, it's not even the same team for most of these teams. And so that's what's always kind of wild about looking back at games. But yeah, I thought this would certainly be a fun exercise to sort of think back on that and see who are going to be the games of the year next season. There will be a lot of choices since it does look at least right now, Max, SEC could get double digits in terms of teams into the NCAA tournament next year. We've talked about that in previous episodes, bracketologies and all that. So we'll see how it plays out. One of the teams that may be included in that may be the Missouri Tigers. And I know what you're thinking. You're talking about the team that went 0-18 in SEC play last year. Yes, and we are going to bring on Drew King because, this was a very fascinating discussion to kind of look at where things went wrong last year for Missouri, and now where things can go right this season to turn this around. So a really in-depth discussion on the Tigers. So let's jump into our conversation with Drew King. All right, guys, we are here with Drew King of PowerMizzou.com, and we're here to talk Missouri basketball. And Max, it was not a fun season for the Tigers last year. It was a fun season the year before. If we could have just replayed that one, that would have been nice, given all my Dennis Gates hype, as everyone knows. But Drew, it's always fun to catch up with you, and I'm just going to give you this question right off the bat here.
Okay.
Three words, all I want to know, because I've asked multiple people this, and I think you always get kind of an interesting answer from each person. What went wrong?
That's a great question. Better one might be what went right, but I'll stick to the one that you asked. So I think that, first of all, injuries obviously played a huge part in it. And I think it's one thing to say, like, there were a lot of injuries, but with this team, the injuries all came at the same position, right? So you had Caleb Grill and John Tanjay miss almost the entirety of the year. All of SEC play, those were Dennis Gates's like two top names out of the transfer portal. And both were supposed to provide a lot of wing depth for them. So with those two guys out, you really only had Tamar Bates and Kurt Lewis who could fill that three position. You even had like Caleb Brown, you know, suffer a season ending leg injury a couple games into the season, which I don't know that he's changing a whole lot, but he would have been at least another option to throw out there. So on top of that, I think that Dennis Gates maybe relied a little bit too much on thinking his returners could develop enough to kind of sustain the level of success they had the year before with Kobe Brown and Damoy Hodge. You had Noah Carter and Nick Honor, who kind of were the same players they were the year before, but taking on bigger roles. And I don't know that they were necessarily ready for that. And so I think that kind of all accumulated into the season that Mizzou had this past year.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot more transfers. So hopefully there's not too many injuries here. We'll get to the transfers, but what I'm kind of curious about first off here, Drew, is some of the freshmen. I feel like they've kind of gotten, and this has kind of been a storyline with most teams here as we've been going episode by episode. We want to talk about all these big name transfers, but like there's a lot of quality freshmen that are already on these rosters that just kind of get, you know, piled down on all the talk. Just kind of run me through a few of the freshmen. I'm personally cannot wait for Boateng, but just for the listeners that are not familiar with this freshman class, what are we getting here?
Yeah, so this is going to be, it's ranked as a top five freshman class in the country, right? So there's five guys that they've brought in. You mentioned the big name, which is Honor Boateng. I've seen him play a couple of times, and every time I think like, oh, he's ready for college right now. Like, he's got that kind of size and strength to him. Really athletic guy, should have no problems getting downhill and defending at this level. I think the big question with him is just his jump shot and how quickly that can come along. But he'll be able to score in a lot of different ways. I think that he'll be a part of the rotation from day one with Dennis Gates. Next guy I would point out is Marcus Allen. And he's what we call a CY special. So Mizzou's assistant coach, Charlton Young, has recruited a lot of guys to the NBA, and they all kind of look alike, right? It's Devin Vassell, it's Scotty Barnes, it's Patrick Williams, it's big, athletic, and lanky guys. He's like a prototypical Florida State kind of wing. So I think Marcus Allen's going to be probably the best defender out of this class. The big question again is just like, can the offense come along enough for him to make his way onto the court? Then you've got the two big guys, Peyton Marshall and Trent Burns. Peyton Marshall is, y'all seen the mountain from Game of Thrones? Like, that's what sounds like to me. He's just gigantic, but has put a lot of work in on his body so he can kind of be conditioned to the college game. So, but he's another guy who's got the size to play right away. It's just, you know, is he ready for big minutes like that? Trent Burns, I think, is going to take a little bit longer. He's 7'2", but probably the same size as Connor Vanover was, like pretty skinny. Mm-hmm. But he's able to kind of step back and has shown some range from the 3-point line. So he'll be kind of an intriguing piece in the mix. And then last but not least is T.O. Barrett. He's a 6'5" combo guard, another guy who's really strong and can defend multiple positions. Kind of a connector guy, right? He's not necessarily your lead point guard, and he's not necessarily your go-to option at the scoring guard spot. But it kind of reminds me of Trey Gomillion a little bit, where he just wants to do whatever it takes to win. And so I can definitely see why Dennis Gates would be interested in somebody like that.
Newly hired Trey Gomillion, who's part of the coaching staff there now. I love it, because I'm sure people know, if they've watched our stuff, that season he was there, I was like, this guy is just, he's like one of my favorite guys, because like you mentioned, he's just a winner. Like, the guy just wants to go out and do whatever it takes to win. So I'm excited to see him kind of continue things there. I will save the Mark Mitchell question for Max, since that's directly for his heart. What, Max? You have to reply to that?
Nope.
I mean, as the resident Duke guy, I figured you'd have something to ask about Mark Mitchell. But I want to ask about Caleb Grill.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just got, you know, Rothstein put the report out there, or whatever that was, a day or two ago, about how he's good to go. I think that was the expectation for a lot of people anyways. But how do you kind of see him now fitting in? Because you just mentioned it. Like, you look at last year's roster, you look at this year's roster. What kind of role do you think Caleb Grill plays, which I'm sure is, you know, if he's ready to go, is a significant one on this team that does have kind of the mix of older guys and the younger guys that we just talked about?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, Rothstein put out that tweet like a couple of weeks after the team put out a video where Caleb Grill is literally like flipping a tire over. So I was like, I figured he was probably ready for basketball related activities. But no, I think that Caleb Grill probably going to have a similar role that he did last year before the injury. I think that he's a really experienced guy, has a real edge about him. It can be really effective defensively, and is a little bit streaky shooter, but when it's on, he's a really, really impactful player for them. So I think that they could definitely have used him during SEC play last year. I don't know that they would have gone winless. I think that he probably swings a couple of games for them if he's healthy. So I think that he's going to be a really important piece for them this year as well.
I'll get to Mark Mitchell. We will get to Mr. Mitchell. But first, though, you had mentioned Marshall and Burns, and we had actually had a discussion on the Missouri starting five, and there was a lot of I wouldn't say debate, but just kind of questions of what is this center spot, what is this five spot going to look like? And I know that we're predicting here. You know, I don't think anyone has a super, super solid idea. But what is your opinion or expectation of what this front court is going to kind of shake out?
Yeah, so I reached out to you after I saw that video, Max, because I was kind of surprised y'all both took Peyton Marshall over Josh Gray. And it's only because I think that Gray has a lot more experience, knows what he's going to, what the expectation is out there. And I also think that he wouldn't have transferred to another SEC school without knowing that he's going to step into a little bit bigger of a role than he had at South Carolina. So I think that he is going to be a part of the puzzle, right? He's got really good rebounding rates, solid rim protector, obviously fouls a lot, but we'll see what happens. They have a little bit more depth at that spot now. So I think that he'll be a big piece of it. I do think Peyton Marshall and Trent Burns do see the court as well. And then, like y'all said in that video, like I also think that we're going to see some small ball lineups with Mark Mitchell at the five and maybe like Jacob Cruz at the four or something like that. But with Josh Gray, I'm just curious, like, what was y'all's opinion of him at South Carolina and kind of how do y'all see him fitting into Mizzou here?
Well, you talk about a mountain. I feel like Josh Gray's kind of like the mountain part two, because we talked about it. I mean, we were mentioning just sort of the Max, we know the bully ball nature of Max Barr's favorite players here. But I mean, he is like, he's 7 foot, what, 265. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I don't remember the exact discussion we had, but I feel like that was the thought, was we were like, well, he didn't play a ton last year, but he did play, the minutes that he did play pretty much all came in SEC competition. Right. He didn't play much early in the season, but really from that, see, I'm looking at it here. Yeah, basically January 23rd on, he played in double digits in pretty much every game. Mm-hmm. And so I think we may have said this, Max, but I think the physicality is what we talked about. Like, it's hard for, we always talk about how, like, for big men, it's harder to come in, especially on the defensive end, right away and feel like you're adjusting to the speed of the game. You're trying to figure out how to stay out of foul trouble. We mentioned just kind of the SEC, how many plays are made at the rim. So if you have someone like this who is used to that physicality in there, and again, not saying that a Peyton Marshall or whoever else would not be, but I think it is easier to initially plug a guy like this in, and the more we think about it, it probably makes the most sense for Dennis Gates, I would say, right off the bat.
Well, and another thing we know about Dennis Gates, it doesn't really matter who's in the starting five necessarily. Like, they're all going to play eventually. So, I think that's kind of how the front court shakes out, with kind of a rotation of Gray, Marshall, and Burns at the five spot.
I think if you look at the past couple seasons for the Dennis Gates era, again, one completely different than the other, but there have been some common themes in terms of, I would say, defense has been left a little bit to be desired at times, probably putting it lightly. There's some other things I think you look at as well. There was obviously a drastic difference between the first team and last year's team in terms of shooting and those kind of things. Do you feel like with what they brought in, because I think that the defense is the one we keep going back to. And obviously, the offense took a big step backward last year. It was not the same. You mentioned why earlier. You kind of had guys in the same spot they were in the year before, when you had to figure out how do you make up for what Kobe Brown and DeMoy Hodge did, DeAndre Golston, those guys. But do you see this team being a team that can take a significant step forward defensively, or is it just kind of the same where a lot of what they're going to rely on will be, we've got to force turnovers, we've got to get the ball out and go to help us offensively? Or do you feel like, hey, maybe this team is a little bit better defensively in the half court with the current roster?
I think it's a little of both, right? Like, I don't expect Dennis Gates to stop hunting turnovers necessarily. Like, I still think they want to get out and go on that front. But you look at the guys that they've brought in, I feel like they've upgraded size-wise at pretty much every position, right? With Tony Perkins being 6'4" and Mark Mitchell being 6'9". And then you've got, Peyton Marshall and Josh Gray, who are 280 pounds plus, right? So I think that they'll be able to hold up a little bit better. Whereas with these past teams, you've got Kobe Brown at the five spot, or Connor Vandenover and being pretty skinny at that spot. So I think that you've also got, like, you don't have Nick Honor at 5'10", having to guard SEC guards anymore. So I think that they'll be a lot better on that front. I think the bigger question for me going into this year is actually on the offensive side of the ball, because a lot of the guys that they brought in have kind of questionable jumpers. And you know, Dennis Gates wants to shoot a lot of threes, and not everybody has proven that they're going to be able to do that effectively. So for me, at least, that's kind of where the bigger questions are for this roster.
All right. I think that almost leads me into my next question. So Tony Perkins, Marquise Warwick, Jacob Cruz, and Mark Mitchell. I don't want to leave Gray out, but we just spent a few minutes talking about him. Those four guys, which of those four guys, Perkins, Warwick, Cruz, Mitchell, is not being talked about enough, or their impact is going to be bigger than most people think? Which of those four guys, because they're all pretty big names, if you've been keeping in touch with the transfer portal and everything, those are four pretty big gets. Which of those four guys is going to bring a little bit something more, in your opinion?
I'll go with Marquez Warwick. I feel like people kind of know about, like you said, Tony Perkins and Mark Mitchell. I think that Jacob Cruz probably isn't being talked about enough, but I think that everybody kind of knows what he's going to do.
Yeah.
With Marquez Warwick, like, this is the nation's leader in career points. I feel like we don't talk about that enough. He's a bucket, right? He's a walking bucket. And I think that he's going to be kind of a mini version of DeAndre Golston, in a sense, right? Where if everything is kind of stuck in the mud, they're going to give him the ball and say, go one-on-one with somebody, help us get out of this mess. I think that he's going to be a really important player. Dennis Gates obviously knows him from his time coaching in the Horizon League. So I think that there's a reason that they went after him. On top of that, like, Tony Perkins and Ant Robinson and T.O. Barrett are kind of the only other point guards on the roster. So I think that Marquez Warwick is going to fill a big hole as one of the guys that can bring the ball up for them.
I mean, we've gone 15 minutes and we haven't mentioned the name Tamar Bates, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's like, I remember Max, I'm telling how many videos we did last year where we're like, Missouri had a chance because of Tamar Bates. Like, that was it. And, you know, you kept thinking, boy, if he didn't do this, if he didn't do that, who knows how that game would have turned out. But they were close in some games, and some of those were because of Tamar Bates. So I guess, Drew, it's kind of the same question I asked earlier with Caleb Grill in a different situation, obviously. But with this roster, this particular team, how does Tamar Bates' role change? How does it, you know, what are your expectations for him now? Another season kind of in this system, playing the style we saw, you know, what can come of it from last year, just based on, again, kind of how we saw him, you know, kind of develop his game. But what are your expectations for him now in his second season at Mizzou?
Yeah. If Tamar would shoot a little bit more, I feel like he could be the leading scorer on this team. He's super efficient pretty much everywhere he goes up. Needs to be a little bit better finishing around the rim. And I would bet that that's a big focus for him this offseason. Because I know it was a focus for them during the season. So I think that Tamar is going to be a real leader on this team after what they went through last year, right? He kind of knows what Dennis Gates' expectations are. And I think that he'll have a pretty similar role that he did last year, kind of playing off the ball. So I still think that he's going to be one of their main offensive options. I think that he'll probably still find a spot in the starting lineup. So I don't have too many different expectations than I did for Tamar last year.
Okay, now let's get to who I
I've been for. Waiting.
So Mark Mitchell, if you look on a depth chart for Missouri right now, if you're trying to paint one out, I feel like most people would put him at the four, if that's fair. You look at his freshman year at Duke, he's at the three the whole year. You look at his sophomore year at Duke, he's at the four the whole year. We have just been talking a little bit about possibly the idea of maybe slip him up to the five some even. Just what is the difference from last year's team to this year's team that just Mark Mitchell is going to make?
Repeat that question. I'm sorry.
So last year's team, we had Noah Carter at the four for most of it. A little bit of Aiden Shaw, a little bit of Trent Pierce. And then at the five, kind of a rotating mix. But now we've got this guy in Mark Mitchell, who's played two entire seasons at Duke with huge minutes. So with that team last year, what we didn't have in the front court, add in Mark Mitchell now, how does that change things? Like, what is Missouri going to be able to do, or what's the impact going to be that Mark Mitchell brings specifically?
Yeah. So y'all were asking me earlier about kind of what's going to change defensively for Missouri. And is that still a big concern? And I feel like Mark Mitchell, like, has washed away most of my concerns by himself about the defensive end. Like, I think that he's going to be a star for Missouri. And it's just because, like, he was ranked really high out of high school and just kind of accepted the role that he was given at Duke. And it really hasn't had a chance to show what he can do in a real feature role. And so I feel like he's going to get that chance at Mizzou. He can guard 1 through 5 pretty effectively. I don't feel like he's going to get necessarily blown up on the block if he has to slide up to a small ball 5 spot. Like, he's got that kind of strength. And then in the paint, I feel like he's a little Kobe Brown-ish, right? Like, very strong, can bully mismatches down there, really athletic. So I think that he's going to be really, really good for Mizzou this year. Just the big question for him, like a lot of these guys, is just the jump shot, right? Obviously shot pretty well his freshman year, and then kind of had a dip this past season. The videos that they've put out, he's losing the hitch in his jump shot. Like, his form's looking a little bit smoother now. On top of his shot from deep, he's also got to get better at the free throw line. I think he shot something like 62% last year. He's a guy that's going to get to the free throw line a lot. So that's a place that he definitely has to improve for sure.
All right. I'll finish with this, Max. You can add something if you want. But so I've asked everyone pretty much we've had on. We're doing these team sort of previews, I guess you could say. You know, if we're looking up in January and we're looking at what are the obvious biggest strengths and biggest weaknesses potentially of this team? I mean, we've kind of mentioned some of them. You mentioned sort of curiosity about the offensive side of things. Maybe that winds up being a weakness with the shooting. We don't yet know. But if you look at this and you had to pick one thing on each side, if we're looking up and saying, all right, Missouri's 14-1, you know, in January, or we look up and Missouri's, you know, 10-6 or something. What's the difference one way or the other? Like, what is the biggest strength on paper you feel like of this team heading into the season? Is it depth? Is it just, you know, adding a playmaker like Mark Mitchell, maybe having that star you feel like they were missing? And then what's the one thing you feel like that could really hold them back? Although I feel like you've kind of already answered that and some of the other stuff we talked about.
Yeah, so the one thing that could hold them back is obviously the jump shots and whether or not they're able to connect on those. I'll also bring up, you know, Mizzou's been bottom 5 in the country the past 2 seasons in defensive rebounding rate.
Yeah.
So that's obviously something they definitely have to improve on. Otherwise, it could be ugly again. But I feel like their biggest strength probably is going to be there on the defensive side of the ball. I feel like this could be a group that, like we said, racks up a lot of turnovers on that end and is able to get out and play fast. Which is not something they were able to do a lot last season. And so I think that it's going to be pretty tough to score, assuming that Mizzou's front court, and specifically like the Josh Gray, Peyton Marshall, Trent Burns trio, is able to hold up against some of the teams that they're going to go up against.
Max?
Yeah, so what I'll wrap up here with, and it's I kind of like to do a fun one to wrap up. So if you had to do, and this is, don't take this as what you're at. This is just what your personal, what your favorite is. If you had to do I would like to see this lineup this year. Just throw it out there. Please, Drew King, please, Dennis Gates, give me a little bit of this lineup. What's that lineup for you?
Okay. I would want like the absolute flamethrower lineup. Okay. So give me Marquez Warrick at point, Tamar Bates at the two. Give me Caleb Grill at the three, mm-hmm. Jacob Cruz at the four, Mark Mitchell at the five. Yes.
There it is. I know you like that, Blake.
Yes.
I love it. Because we tried to make that argument. We did the guest, we were like, guess the starting lineup. I'm like, I know we both kept looking at it and we're like, Mitchell's just not really played the five. They're not going to do that. But then I'm like, Max, the more we look at this, oh man, it's kind of interesting. If you look at it, like you could have a lot of fun with this idea because the reason too, I feel like we said this was because if you're playing that lineup, they have so many big guys on the roster to where mm-hmm. like even Mark Mitchell at 6'8", you're like, well, Autumn, that means you're going to take a step down at the four. Well, not really because Jacob Cruz is 6'8", too. And so it's like, you know, yeah, like the Bates is 6'5". Like you still got the bigger guards. And I know Drew mentioned that earlier. Like it's the difference between having kind of big guards at every position versus maybe having, you know, a smaller guard here and then a little bit step. But that helps in the SEC when you kind of have that size across the board. So you don't have to have a 7-foot guy. You don't have to have a 6'10" guy necessarily. So I like this one. I think you could go multiple 6'8" guys and then everything else, guard position, wing type. I'm in on that one.
So can I wrap up with a question for y'all?
Uh-oh.
Okay. No, so we talked about, obviously, like all the transfers that they brought in, all the freshmen that they brought in. Do you think this offseason would have been significantly better had Missouri made the tournament last year instead of going winless in SEC play?
I will say yes. Here's what I'll say, Max. I'll say yes because – I mean, just it raises your profile, right? It's harder to sell an Ofer team than it is a team that just got to the tournament back-to-back years and the coach's first 2 years on the job. But you know, even with NIL, I think it's still a hard sell. Like when you're saying, hey, come join the team. We just went 0-1 whatever. That's still tough probably in this era. But I do feel like showing that you can get a Mark Mitchell who – and that's not to knock any other guys they've gotten, but I think that was kind of the one where, okay, like they're doing something right if they're able to do this. And so, yes, it probably would have been easier to sell kind of where the program's at because you could also just say, well, there's nowhere to go but up. And I hate to say it that way, but it's kind of true. But I still think they did a pretty good job because, I mean, and we're not going to give away like our rankings or anything, Max, but we've debated. We're like, we feel pretty strong that Missouri's an NCAA tournament team within this group of maybe 10 in the SEC that are NCAA tournament teams. And so I think we may wind up having them higher than other people will have them. But, you know, that's not just my Dennis Gates bias coming in. I think it's also just when you compare their roster and you look at some of the other teams, to me, at least on paper, there are not a lot of teams that have the kind of depth that Missouri has. And I think that could be the most interesting thing. And like you said, Drew, if there is a big defensive improvement and, you know, Mark Mitchell is kind of a superstar and you get Caleb Grill back doing what he can do, we talked about all the intrigue with all the new guys. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about there, I think, even though some people will be pessimistic, probably just based on, and I don't know that I could blame them based on what happened last year. So,
yeah, I would say obviously, every team is trying to make the tournament and use that as a selling point. But I think having that first year, that big first year, 16-3 at home, just how fun that team was, how exciting that team was, the NBA on the team. I think having that to shoulder to say like, hey, look at the team. We lost this guy. We lost this guy. We lost this guy to injury. You can kind of understand, like as a recruit or as a transfer, like, I can see how it went wrong here, and I can also understand what happened the first year. But let's say Gray is the starter, and let's say it's either Warrick and Bates are the first two off the bench, or Warrick and Cruz, or something like that. You're going grad, senior, junior, grad, and then your first two off the bench are senior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you have that, and now you have probably the most motivated coaching staff in the country. I mean, if there's any sort of like fire starter for motivation, a season like last year is going to do the trick. So I don't know. I I'm not going to say going over in the SEC was a good thing, a good selling point, but having that first season in the bag to have that foundation and then that season as motivation, I mean, geez, I'm a glass half full guy, but I like this spot, this motivational spot, the recruits they got. This is a staff with a fire lit underneath them right now.
Yeah, so my thought was just kind of like, if you make the tournament, I still don't know that you could do a lot better than Mark Mitchell and Tony Perkins as right. The headliners in your transfer class. I think that, like y'all said, they did a really good job in the portal this year. And Max, you're absolutely right. Like that first year making the tournament obviously helps a lot, right? It's kind of an anchor that you can point yep. to. So yeah, I'm kind of with y'all. I think that there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about Mizzou this year.
Well, the Dennis Gates revenge tour is on, and a lot at stake for me, maybe going into this season as well. But
your client?
No, my client, yes. but we'll see if we can turn things around. But anyways, Drew, always fun to catch up with you, as we said. I'm sure we'll talk to you again here soon, probably before the season. We're getting close, but we're still 4 months away from the start of the season. But yeah, again, let everybody know where you can find all your stuff there at PowerMizzou.com and anything else you're working on.
Yeah, so find all my stuff on PowerMizzou.com. You can follow me on Twitter at DrewKing0222. And we should have a lot of off-season content coming out. Good. Thank you all for having me on. Good luck in trivia next round, and I'll see you all next time.
All right, that was Drew King. And, Drew with some great insight into this Missouri team. And, man, lots of options this year for Dennis Gates, and I think that margin for error we talked about was so slim last year. It feels like they got a little bit more of that this season, which is always helpful in the SEC, knowing that one injury, man, it's the depth and the talent in this league. Man, you got to have it. So, all right, Max, let's jump into trivia. We started to pick up some steam here on trivia in recent weeks. Let's see if we can keep it going. I will let you ask the question to me first.
Well, you have picked up some steam.
Well, that's true. Sorry, just for full disclosure.
Okay, so last year there were loads of good guards in the SEC, loads of them. Some of them returners, some of them newcomers, but pretty much every squad last year had at least one, really entertaining, really good guard. My question to you is, which guard last year led the conference in assist rate? Because when you look at the national rankings, there's a lot of SEC up at the top of it. So, and there's one guy. So I'll give you the assist rates, and I want you to tell me who the number one guy is. Okay. So the top five assist rates, number five is 26.8%. All right. Then it jumps up to 28.4 and 28.7 for 4 and 3. Number two, a little bit higher, 29.8%. Okay, so all relatively the same. And the number one is up at 33.9%. So there's a big jump there into that number one guy. Who is he?
I feel like I should know this. Man. Like, is it obvious? Or is it like one of those where I'm just going to be... It is obvious. Okay.
Yep.
Huh. Well...
When you hear it, you'll be like, okay, yeah, I don't know why I didn't.
I mean, Mark Sears feels almost too obvious. Right?
Is that your?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it almost feels too obvious if it's Mark Sears. So, like, I'm wondering if it was that clear that he was the front runner. I mean, though, the more I think about it, the highest scoring team, point guard, he scores a lot. Other guys score a lot.
I'll clarify that.
Okay. So it's not Mark Sears. Thank you for the hint. Walter Clayton's an interesting one, but I don't, or maybe was pulling more of the, no, it may not have been, I don't think it was Clayton. Oh boy.
I'll tell you 10 through 6. So you
all right, do that.
Narrow it down. All right. 10 is Juju Murray. 9 is Zion Pullen.
Ooh,
I 8 is high. Aaron Estrada. 7, Sean East. And 6, Justin Hill. That's 10 through 6. Mm.
All right, so that leaves, you know, that leaves guys like Taylor, Ziegler, Sears. Man, I'm trying. Is anybody in Kentucky? Like, would it? I feel like those guys just sort of interchanged a bit. Or wait, was it? No, he wasn't a point guard.
The wheels are turning.
I mean, you kind of said it wasn't Mark Sears, but like that would be my most obvious answer. So I wonder if it's as simple as Zakai Ziegler. Yeah, I'm going to go Ziegler because he had to connect on the team. And so if Ziegler was assisting to connect or someone else, then I could see Ziegler being that guy. So I'll go Zakai Ziegler just because of the connection with the highest score in the league versus you kind of told me it wasn't Mark Sears. So I'll go with Ziegler as the second choice.
Ziegs.
Aha.
The man himself.
You're right. It would have made sense had I not picked that because I'm like, he had the highest score. So if he was assisting, and plus he's generally just a good assist guy. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Bonkers. Up at 33.9%. Rob Dillingham was second at 29.8%. Ezra Mannion was third at 28.7%.
I was going to mention Mannion. I thought he may be kind of a sleeper choice. Yeah.
Yep. 4 was Trey Donaldson.
I wouldn't have guessed that one.
At 28.4, and the number 5, Wade Taylor.
Okay.
So, yeah, but Ziegler with some crazy numbers. He was actually 29th in the nation. So he's up
Interesting.
There.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'm going to stick with my theme of who did they play for, because I always like to expand your knowledge of long time ago SEC players. I'll let you even pick the category this time, okay? I'll let you pick the category. Would you like a recent one or an older one? Because I know like your initial thought's going to be, I'd like a recent one because I have a better chance of getting it right. But if you really want to, you know, test the knowledge and go way back when, you can have one or the other. You want a layup or you want a three-point shot here? Or half-court shot?
Give me like a deep three.
All right, so I will keep this, like I said, within the decade. And boy, was this team in a different spot this time around than they are now. Completely different landscape and trajectory. Maybe not, because it was, you kind of knew it was going to happen, but it took a couple seasons to get there. So, Max, this program in a different spot now than it was when this guy was on the team. And I'm not saying it's his fault, because in actuality, we're going to talk about his role in a second. Who did Simeon Bowers play for?
Yep. Yeah, I know this one. Yep. Definitely. I remember watching Bowers. And you said the program's in a much different place.
The program
right now
is completely different spot than it was at this point.
Okay. Wait a second. All right. Okay. The program is in a different spot, you say.
Night and day, one would say.
Because Bowers played for Auburn.
Ah, look at you coming through. You have regained your momentum in trivia because he did play for Auburn in 2015 and 16. And yes, the program, as we said, in a different spot. Those were the first 2 years for Bruce Pearl there, 15 and 20, 11 and 20. But I know Auburn fans certainly can remember back and the role that he played at 6'7", 260, 70 pounds. I mean, there were times where he was playing point guard on this team. Like, it was just, it was so interesting to see. Like, you know, he became someone that, like, Bruce Pearl had to keep on the floor, and he played, like, so many different roles. I feel like, you know, he'd have to lead him in rebounding. There were times where he'd have to try to lead him in assists and scoring. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting to look back on how different things were for Auburn then in those first couple seasons. But he is one that I remember, you know, very vividly because of just having to play the different roles. And people are like, wait a second, why is this guy that's 6'7", 270 bringing the ball up the floor? That was just kind of where they were at that point, but have come a long way since then. And yeah, so I mean, he had, again, it is interesting to think back and just kind of see the role that he played on those teams. So
you keep picking guys that I would just fall in love with if they played.
Oh, today. you would be a huge fan based on what he did for that Auburn team. No question in my mind. So there you go. We both get one right. Not very often.
That might be a first.
We'll see if we get this one right. We're going to guess the starting lineup because we're talking about the South Carolina Gamecocks here. Father Lamont Paris knows better than we do because Father knows best, as we've said many times before. But Max, this is a different roster this year, and yep. I think this one, I don't know. I don't have a great feel. As we said, some of these have felt like pretty much slam dunks on what you're going to get. There are certainly a couple spots we feel pretty confident about. Colin Murray Boyles is going to start. I don't think we have any doubt about that. I think beyond that, I mean, you would assume Nick Pringle's getting the start.
Pringle,
Just based on, you know, coming in from Alabama. So you feel like your front court's pretty much set. Then I guess from there, you know, we try to figure out how, you know, we do the rest of these spots here and figure out who's going to slot into these roles, knowing that some of our favorites for the Gamecocks from last year have exited.
Yeah. So, okay, let's work backwards. So we got Pringle at the five, Murray Boyles at the four, and behind Murray Boyles, I might say this first name wrong, Oku Federico. If you know Federico on Pitt, big man, this is his younger brother. Seen some Pascal Siakam comparisons to Mr. Federico, so watch out. Not saying no one's starting over Murray Boyles, but watch out. So yeah, Pringle, Murray Boyles. I'm going Zachary Davis at the three.
Yeah, I forgot to mention him. Yeah, he's another one I think you can slot in there. Yeah,
I mean, we saw him at the, I forget, it might have been the 1-3-1 zone, right at the top of the key there. Zachary Davis, like, by himself could, like, disrupt the entire offense with how good he was down the stretch there. Miles Studi right behind him, very good off the bench, 3-point shooter, but I feel pretty confident Zachary Davis is going to start on the wing there, Blake.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know why I didn't group him in. We did talk about him quite a bit, kind of in those different spots he played in for that team last year. I'm curious what you think about this guard group, because
that's,
I think there are multiple combinations I feel like you can work with here.
Yep.
And, you know, it really is a question, like we said. You know, you've got some of the returning guys. You know, Jacoby Wright's there.
Yep.
And I'm curious, like, how that rotation looks, because we know, too, a very talented player joining the roster. And so, yeah, like, this is the most fascinating part of this thing, is the backcourt. I think to see how Lamont Paris uses the backcourt, knowing you got a top 50 guy coming in, you know, he's a South Carolina native. I know, like, sometimes we're like, well, that doesn't really matter, but
it does.
You know, he is someone who has come into the program as a highly touted recruit. We're talking about Cam Scott, and
yeah,
I feel like there will be, you know, hey, let's get this guy out there, and if he's ready, which I mean, when you watch him play, I feel like he's ready. Yeah, like, I'm curious to see if that's kind of where they go from the start, and if so, I mean, hey, you're already building out a pretty dangerous starting lineup here, if that's the case. So,
yeah. So my cousin actually went to high school with Cam Scott. So I got the inside scoop. No,
you got the intel. Okay.
No. But I have dug into him a little bit. And on the Trilly Discord in the South Carolina, in the South Carolina channel, they feel pretty strongly that Cam Scott, is going to get a starting spot. They feel pretty confident in that. And hey, if they're more tapped into that team than I am right now. But you have the one and the two at Morris Yugusic. I'm going to slate him as a guy off the bench. I'm not going to put him in there right now, but he could take a leap. I kind of put him into almost that, like, Denzel Aberdeen kind of category, guy that might take a leap here. But Jamari Thomas, Cam Scott, Jacoby Wright, I feel like you got these three guys to start in those two roles, and all are very capable of bringing the ball up the court. I think probably Jacoby Wright and Thomas would be the preferred primary ball handlers. But any kind of way you slice it, I'd be fine with it if you have two of those three guys, Thomas, Scott, and Wright, starting there in the backcourt.
Thomas feels like a Lamont Paris type guard. I don't know if we mentioned that in other videos before. I don't remember when we talked about that. But I think, you know, coming from Norfolk State, I feel like he is, I think just the way he plays, like he does, he feels like someone that's like a
junkyard
should fit in,
dog.
Yeah, should fit in well, I think, with the way they want to play. And obviously that's why they got him. I think that figuring out that combination, but I'm with you. I would probably go Cam Scott right now, just because I think, you know, again, kind of the expectations, they got him for a reason. He's really good. And but that front court, I think the potential there, knowing that Murray Boyles is a player of the year type candidate, you assume that trajectory continues in terms of development. I'm curious what the rotation looks like. Let's say that first five games or whatever at the guard position, and whatever kind of mixing and matching they do with that, I think is what I'm most fascinated by with this group. And like we said, also, I mean, you're looking at it, we're talking about the potential combinations here, and even like we mentioned a minute ago, Miles Studi, I will tell you, full disclosure, like I think South Carolina was a team, everybody will laugh, it's like initially I was kind of like, I don't know what to make of them, because it is, you know, it's a different season, you're trying to keep that momentum going, knowing that you have a different roster. That's not as easy to do in this era as it used to be, whatever, 10 plus years ago, when you kind of had the same roster each season. But South Carolina is a team that the more I look at the roster, the more I get a little bit more excited. Like, I think there is that potential to keep this thing going. And I know a lot of South Carolina fans were making a lot of the bracketology, and Lenardi didn't have them in and all this. But as I said, it's the way you want it. That's the way we play the game here. Like, you want them being underrated because it worked really well last year. So,
yeah, I think when you look at it, you really like that foundation of, you know, Zachary Davis, Murray Boyles, Pringle. It's going to be a nice defense. It's going to be really scrappy. I think the main question, though, that people have is just shooting. You know, you lose BJ Mack, who is kind of your, you know, take the underneath out. You bring him way up and it opens stuff up for Murray Boyles. And you lose Cooper and Michi, who are, you know, Talon Cooper was shooting, I think, 46% from three in SEC play. So maybe you do see a little bit more of Studi than you would think. To add in that shooting, you know, who knows? The foundation is there, no question.
All right, so we've established that our starting five, Max, and the guest of the starting lineup, Nick Pringle, Colin Murray-Boyles, Zachary Davis, Cam Scott, Jamari Thomas.
Bingo.
All right, that's what we're going with for now. We have plenty of time to change our minds. We got 4 months until the season starts, so we will likely change our minds. South Carolina fans, let us know your thoughts on who you think starts for this unit. All right, Max, as always, we're going to wrap up with one bold prediction. And as we continue to keep a running tab on these, I just love it, because I'm like, we have to get one of these right somewhere. And as we always say, some will be more bold than others, but I'll let you go first here. I don't know about my pick this week, but I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, so I've been keeping a theme here, Blake. I've been keeping a theme here. Whatever our guest interview is, I've been making my or whatever our starting lineup is, whatever we talk about earlier, I try to make my bold prediction to match up with that. So I'm going, we're going with Missouri here, okay? And I'm doubling down on our earlier take that Peyton Marshall will be the starter over Josh Gray. Wow. I'm doubling down. And Peyton Marshall, welcome to the SEC all-freshman team. Welcome, Peyton Marshall, because you know why? As good as Josh Gray is, let's call him the horse. Come on, we know who he is. As phenomenal as he plays his role, does not put out all that much offense. And Drew had just explained to us earlier how Trent Burns, a little bit skinnier, a little bit taller, kind of a bit more of a project, going to have to work on his physicality. Hey, someone's going to have to score down low in that post whose name is not Mark Mitchell. Give me Peyton Marshall. Gonna have yourself a year, big fella.
All right. Okay. So the problem, one of the problems here is me trying to keep up with what I've actually said before, but I think I should be noting these probably as well as you are right now on this. But I'm going to, and like we say, some of these are bold predictions, and you're trying to figure out exactly how this thing's going to play out. And I was going to go back to Vanderbilt for my prediction, but everybody kind of keeps making fun of me. They're like, you just keep bringing up Vanderbilt. I'm like, I get it, but I get more interested in this Mark Byington team. We need our guy Sam Smith to say that. But I feel like we should just get a clip of that and just loop it in anytime we talk about Vanderbilt. Like always, just anytime we're going to go say Mark Byington, just put Sam's.
Just have a button we press
to do it. Yeah. But I'm gonna kind of go with a breakout star type theme for this one. Okay, because I feel like there's a lot of candidates we could choose from, right? I mean, we've talked about them in some of these teams we've already kind of done a deep dive into, you know, in some of the interviews and such. But I feel like I can't go Chris Youngblood, which is one of the ones I had on my list, because I'm like, we've already just kind of hyped Chris Youngblood up to like the biggest level we can.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to your team, one of your many teams, to the Ole Miss Rebels. And say that, you know, this is a guy who started in the SEC, which, once again, it actually does have a Vanderbilt theme. He started at Vanderbilt, went to Belmont, and now he comes to Ole Miss. So I will say that one of the breakout stars this upcoming season is Malik Dia.
I love it.
Because if the Rebels are going to have success, I think they need him to be that. Remember, you go back last year. He was, well, I mean, what is the numbers? I got to pull up the numbers he averaged at Belmont. 17 points, 6 rebounds, shot about 49%. And I think, you know, he's got the size. It's 6'9", 240, 245, whatever he is. I think that's what I'm intrigued by. And I think that you and I have talked about with Ole Miss, like, will we see more of a Chris Beard-type team this season? And I think if that's going to happen, you've got someone that can, you know, block shots. And I know, like, foul trouble is going to be one of those things, right? And I think as always in the SEC, when you're coming in trying to adjust. But I don't know. I think there's the potential for him to have a breakout year right away here at Ole Miss, which you're expecting if you're bringing him in kind of at the spot. So he's playing alongside Brakefield. There's opportunity. So I'll go Malik Dia as a breakout season for the Rebels, one of the breakout stars of the SEC.
That's a good – those Chris Beard forwards – telling you, there's a long history with him. He likes those. He likes that kind of undersized, versatile, can switch defensively, isolate him offensively. I like it.
Ole Miss is a team I don't have a great read on yet, but when you look at that starting five, that's a pretty good
lineup.
Love
the offense.
Maybe that's a tease, Max. How about we do guess the starting lineup, Ole Miss? Next week. How about that's the next team out? How about
that?
Sign
me up.
Nice segue into the next episode of the SEC Basketball Experience. But there you go. There was a lot of interesting information on SEC basketball. Again, well, we appreciate Drew King for joining us. A lot of fun as always as we look through some of these teams and try to figure out how this league's going to play out in 24-25. But for now, be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit the like button. Again, we are Southeastern 16. Be sure to update anywhere if you got us bookmarked. We're on Southeastern 16 everywhere, so you can check that out there. We're always looking for sponsors. If you want to sponsor the show, you can reach out to caroline.smith@southeastern14.com. We know it still says Southeastern 14, but trust me, it will filter. It will filter to 16. We will get that. It'll be changed eventually, but it's a process, folks. So if you want to reach out, sponsor the show, advertise, you can do that. Millions of folks have checked out everything we've done here at Southeastern 16 over the past little while. Hundreds of thousands of visitors per month watching these videos and shows. So if you want to have your show or have your product, you know, advertised here, reach out to us. We'd love to do it. So again, we appreciate you guys watching and or listening as always, and we'll talk to you again here soon at Southeastern 16.